Welcome to episode 20 of Crime Time for Friday, June 15th on FayObserver.com, featuring Fayetteville Observer Police and Crime Reporter Nancy McCleary. I'm Sonny Jones. On the podcast, we'll look at issues involving crime, courts, and public safety, highlighting stories in the news. And a reminder, anyone we discuss who has been charged with a crime is presumed innocent until found guilty in a court of law. Nancy, let's get started. Right off the top, a Florida man has been accused of stealing rent payments totaling more than $16,000 from Fayetteville apartment complexes and a mobile home park in a five-day period in March. 17 places involved. Tell us a little bit about this story that we found out about on Friday, June 15th.
The man's name is Jorge Luis Perez Montalvo. He's 28, of Hialeah, Florida, and he's charged with 120 counts of larceny by chose in action. And what that actually means is that it's a theft of a financial document or a document that has value, like a property deed.
What it actually means is lawmakers need a grammar lesson, larceny and chose. But
well,
anyway.
Yeah. But Mr. Montalvo is also charged with 17 counts, I believe it is, of breaking and entering, and one count each of obtaining property by false pretense and conspiracy. And what he was doing, according to the warrants, he was taking people in apartment complexes, often drop their rent payments into that Dropbox.
Who hasn't done that?
Yeah, well, he was allegedly broke into the Dropboxes and stole the checks.
Wow.
He is actually accused of doing similar crimes throughout the Southeast, and he was extradited here from Georgia. And his bail was set at $1.445 million.
Wow, that's a lot of rent payments to cover that one. But, you know, one thing, I guess this just shows my, having never been a criminal, although I've thought about it from time to time.
Yeah.
And sometimes some of the stories I've written over the years have been criminal. But anyway, if the checks are made out to the mobile home park or to the apartment complex and he steals the check,
it's called obtaining property.
But I mean, how does he get the money? I mean, what's the
because
point?
They probably, what they do is alter the checks or represent themselves, hence the obtaining property by false pretense.
All right. Well, I'll make note of that if I ever decide to.
Right. There you go.
Anyway, I mean, that's an amazing story you found out about on Friday, and that's, you know, you hear about stuff like you just casually drop your check in a drop box that has been done, you know, millions and millions of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess today people take advantage of it. We'll see how that case turns out, but hope everything works out for the people that were the tenants. I mean, did you hear anything from the tenant's standpoint? I mean, certainly, hopefully nobody got evicted because quote unquote pay their bill.
Word I heard was that apparently some people did.
Oh, man.
And of course, now that this has been uncovered, hopefully the property managers will work with the tenants on that.
Man, that's the saddest part.
Right.
Of the whole story. I mean, if you or your family got evicted because you quote unquote didn't pay and you actually did and the check was stolen. See how that story turns out. All right, what's our next story, Nancy?
The next story involves an indictment against William Earl Hendricks of Fayetteville. He was arrested Friday, June 15th, after being indicted by Cumberland County Grand Jury for involuntary manslaughter in the death of Heather Kaufman. She died in his home after a drug overdose.
Now, Kaufman, who was 25 years old, was found unresponsive in the bathroom on the evening of October 7th, 2015. She was pronounced dead that evening, according to an autopsy done by the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner in Raleigh. And what makes this case interesting is it's one of the few times in Cumberland County that a criminal charge has been filed as a result of a drug overdose. Nancy, you spoke with District Attorney Billy West. What did he have to say about this?
Well, he wouldn't discuss specifics of the case, of course, but he did say it is a new approach for the DA's office and law enforcement agencies in an effort to crack down on this opioid epidemic.
Yeah, opioids have become a major problem in Cumberland County and a major problem to actually say the word. Not only a problem here, but the Cape Fear region across the nation, really, it's frightening. And in your reporting over the past year or so, have you noticed an increase in the opioid-related cases, and what have you heard from law enforcement?
I've noticed an increase in opioid charges, opioid-related charges being filed, but what I've also been seeing and hearing on the police scanners is the number of overdoses that are occurring. It's people don't know because they're not hearing it, and they don't know, but this is happening. You see these obituaries in the paper of these young people, and nine times out of ten, it's an overdose. Yeah. A 2016 report by the health information company Castlight showed Fayetteville with the 18th worst problem in the country, with opioid abuse affecting 7.9% of the population. And in this city of more than 200,000 people, that means nearly 16,000 are struggling with some level of addiction.
It is a major, major problem. I think a lot of communities are really coming together to try to get a handle on it. I do want to mention, if Heather Kaufman's name sounds familiar, go ahead. Yeah, okay. If it sounds familiar, she was the focus of a two-part series in The Observer in April 2017 about heroin and sex trafficking in Fayetteville. It was written by our former Observer reporter, Monica Vindantuli. You can find those stories on our website, fayobserver.com, by searching Heather Kaufman. You need to read those. It kind of gives you an idea of the human trafficking that was going on, and still is, and the opioid crisis and all the drugs that are involved with that.
Well, to give you a statistic from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, North Carolina's heroin overdose rate from 2014 to 2015 increased 46% from 266 deaths to 393. And I'd also like to say how many times I have heard on the scanner where people are taking these things and they're overdosing and they're in their cars with their kids in the car with them, and they're at the side of the road, they're out in the street, and it's a horrible problem.
It is. And hopefully, as a community and a society, we can at least start to get somewhat of a handle on it as the months and years go by. Well, Nancy, you remember Kiet Vo, I believe is the way you pronounce it, maybe not. His case was a topic on a recent edition of Crime Time. The alleged mastermind of an illegal gambling enterprise denies any involvement in the four large-scale underground video gambling establishments that were shut down in 2015 after a 16-month investigation by the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office. He pled guilty to conspiracy to conduct an illegal gambling business in May and will soon begin serving an 18-month sentence in federal prison. Nancy, you had a chance to speak with Mr. Vo recently. What's his story?
Well, he maintains he only repaired the video game machines for those who ran the business. There were co-conspirators who were also indicted, but Mr. Vo referred to himself as a handyman and said he was basically on call for 24 hours a day and that his fee was 25% of the week's profit from these machines. He said sometimes he might make money, he might get $1,000, or sometimes he might not get anything. Most of the time, Vo either he would pick up his payment or it would be delivered to him at his home. On occasions, he would have his wife to pick them up. Fong Trong, if I'm saying that correctly, is his wife, and she has also been indicted, and she's scheduled to be sentenced in federal court in July.
And it's worth noting that investigators discovered during when all this was going on that the weekly profits from the gaming businesses were between $25,000 and $60,000. That's a week. So, and you mentioned Vo's wife. She also pled guilty to some of the charges. And part of the agreement, both of them, forfeit this property, which included more than $200,000 in Fayetteville banks.
Well, let me also say this. Mr. Vo maintained that he pled guilty because he was afraid that he and his was going to be separated from his family. Right. His wife and children live in Myrtle Beach, and he was actually allowed to go and live with them after his wife had entered her plea. They didn't want them discussing the case, but now he came back to Fayetteville, and he'll be gone.
Yeah, he will be separated from his family here in a couple of weeks.
That's what I told him.
A Spring Lake man who was wanted for attempted murder in the town of Spring Lake is now accused of taking part in a fatal shooting of a man in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Tell us about it, Nance.
Well, Terrence Isaac Blackwell was wanted by Spring Lake police for the May 3rd shooting of Julian McCormick, who was shot in the arm. He was hospitalized for several days. Police, the Spring Lake police, issued warrants for attempted first-degree murder, an assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury, which is also called the alphabet charge.
Yeah.
And Blackwell's girlfriend, Ashante McNeil, was arrested at the scene by Spring Lake police, and she was charged with accessory after the fact to attempted first-degree murder.
So what happened to Blackwell in all this?
Well, apparently he fled to South Carolina after the shooting in Spring Lake. However, Blackwell and Earl Raphael Gaddis Jr., also of Spring Lake, were charged with murder June 8th by Myrtle Beach police in the death of Sylvester Bellamy Jr. Bellamy was found June 7th in a public restroom on the Grand Strand with a gunshot wound. He died at a hospital. Blackwell and Gaddis were arrested in Myrtle Beach on June the 8th, according to Myrtle Beach Police Department records. Myrtle Beach detectives discovered during their investigation that McNeil was staying at a nearby hotel and had allegedly assisted Blackwell in eluding Spring Lake authorities, according to reports. McNeil was charged June 12th by Spring Lake police with felony harboring a fugitive. Her bail was set at $50,000.
Now, Gaddis was wanted by Greensboro police for a March incident in which two employees of Greensboro College were injured. According to the Greensboro News and Record, both suffered head injuries. Gaddis was a student at the college where he was on the football team, the newspaper said. He was expelled after the assault incident, according to the Greensboro paper, and obviously let go by the football team. In addition to murder, Myrtle Beach police have charged Blackwell and Gaddis with drug and weapons-related charges. Those two men have some issues.
And let me add one thing about Mr. Gaddis. He apparently played football early on in high school at Pine Forest, and he was recruited. He went to Overhills.
And at Overhills. And yep. Then so anyway, those two are in some trouble, I would say. Well, time for our weekly look at the work of the U.S. Attorney's Office, Nancy. This seems to be a feature because it's a regular feature. You know, they're announced crackdown. We've mentioned it week after week. Take back North Carolina.
Right.
And so what have we got this week from the Attorney's Office?
Well, this week, a Fayetteville man who was found in possession of a gun while on probation for a sex offense was sentenced to 6.5 years in federal prison. And this comes from the press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of North Carolina out of Greenville. This is where this case was, where he was sentenced. Javion Denton Scott, and I'm sorry if I butchered your name, pleaded guilty in March to possession of a firearm by a felon, the release said. The charge was filed after local and federal authorities went to Scott's home on Galleria Drive in March 2017 to conduct a warrantless search, court documents said. And the warrantless searches were a condition of him being out on post time after being released.
And anybody on probation
is subject to
a warrantless search whenever.
Correct.
And that's part of the deal.
Right. And according to the documents, Mr. Scott's girlfriend, who was there, he took some time answering the door. And yes. Then when they got in there, one of the agents, I believe a federal alcohol, tobacco, and firearms agent, looked over the balcony and saw two guns and her purse lying below in the grass. And they searched his vehicle and found another gun. Mm.
From the crime blotter, it's that time. A Fayetteville man is accused of assaulting an officer from Cumberland County Animal Control as she was seizing two dogs from a home on Gertrude Street. Clarence Jr. Smith of Rose Hill Road is charged with common law robbery and assault on a government official. The animal control officer, Tammy Mosley, was taking two pit bulls from the home when Smith used his shoulder and arm to push her away from the dogs, who were being loaded onto her truck, according to arrest warrants in the Cumberland County Magistrate's Office. Smith then removed the dogs from the truck, resulting in the common law robbery charge, according to warrants. Well, Nancy, you can have this next item.
Well, a Fayetteville man is accused...
I'm giving you the good ones tonight.
Thank you. Anyway, a Fayetteville man is accused of exposing himself to two children and an adult in the parking lot of the Walmart on Skybow Road. This is according to arrest warrants. Jose Elias Gonzalez Ramirez of Calvin Circle, and I apologize again for butchering the name, was charged with two felony counts of indecent exposure to a person under the age of 16 and one misdemeanor count of indecent exposure. The incident happened May 18th, warrants said. Ramirez allegedly exposed himself in front of the two children who were ages 7 and 9.
Natasha Miranda Shipman of Old Wilmington Road is accused with setting fire to a house on Nemex Avenue about 11 p.m. on Monday, June 11th, according to an arrest warrant. She's been charged with arson. One person was living in the house but not injured. And let's wrap it up with this, Nancy. It's all yours.
Apparently, a gentleman, Mark Dones,
yes,
of Cedar Creek Road, has been charged with breaking and entering into a neighbor's home. Arrest documents say he broke in so he could go through the woman's underwear drawer.
What? Say that again?
Yes, he broke in, so it said, to go through the woman's underwear drawer.
And why would this be?
The arresting officer wrote on the paperwork that the defendant admitted to having an underwear fetish.
You know, seldom on this show am I speechless.
Yeah, well.
But,
yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what. That's it. I've had enough after that one. That's it for episode 20 of Crime Time for Friday, June 15th. We welcome your comments and suggestions for Crime Time.
You can reach me, Nancy McCleary, by email at mccleary@fayobserver.com. And that's spelled M-C-C-L-E-A-R-Y. Or you can reach me at Twitter at FO_McCleary.
And unless you have a fetish, you can reach me, Sonny Jones, by email at sjones@fayobserver.com or on Twitter at FOSonnyJones. Again, thanks so much for listening. Hope you'll tune in next time for the next edition of Crime Time.